And let's start with work session on Senate Bill 192. Janet.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 192 was carried over from your Thursday meeting. This is a bill that would allow the Department of Consumer and Business Services to suspend a building trades license under various circumstances and can condition, deny, suspend, or revoke or refuse to renew a license under various conditions. We had the Dash 1 amendments that had taken out the ability of the department to suspend a building trades license for up to 30 days without notice or hearing. So that is no longer in the amendments, and the missing portion of the Dash 1 amendments that are in the Dash 2 amendments, actually it was deletion of something in the Dash 1 amendments. It was decided not to go forward with the payment of being able to sanction a trades license for a CCB order to pay damages. So for the other agency to have a paying damages effect of trades license. So in the Dash 1 amendments, that was lines 14 through 17, and those lines are not in the Dash 2 amendments.
Okay. You want to come forward and
speak about this, Mark?
See if this solves our questions, concerns.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mark Long, I'm the Administrator of State Building Codes. And we, and I thank staff and everybody who's helped us with this, we asked for the Dash 2 because we made a commitment to our contractors to take out a particular piece that was in the bill, and we didn't get that done in the Dash 1 amendment. So staff is correct. There's just one change between 192-1 and 192-2, and that is deletion of the language that is on the Dash 1 lines 14 through 17. We've shared it with our contractors that are here, and they're comfortable with what we've done.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Long. Senator Starr.
Move the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 192.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 192. Discussion.
Yes.
Senator Montes-Anderson.
Chair, I don't see where in the Dash 2s you have added GHI and then you've added K, and I don't see them in the original bills. Are these new entities then? And because I know you deleted it, but have you added?
They're added here.
G. Where is that?
Do you have the original bill in front of you, Mark?
Yeah, I do.
Mr. Chair,
I just need to know in the amendment, mm-hmm. line 8, mm-hmm. or line after line 37, you're supposed to insert G. And is this language already in the original bill?
No.
No. This
Chair,
is all
no.
new.
That's correct.
So you had said that the only change is by deleting the first section, but...
Mr. Chair, I corrected Senator Montes-Anderson. The change between the amendments of 192-1 and 192-2,
okay.
the only change
and
is taken
And this is
out.
In the Dash 1.
Yeah.
Now
I'm
understand.
Sorry I wasn't clear about
now
that.
I understand. Okay.
Change
thank you.
In the amendment, not the bill.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Any objection? To order.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move that Senate Bill 192 as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 192 as amended by the Dash 2 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered. All right. Senator Decker excused. All right. Who would like to carry that bill? Anybody? Senator George, I'll give that to you. How's you? Is that all right?
Fine.
I'd like to hear from you on the other side over there once in a while. You know?
He's hiding.
Hiding down that left side of my dais here. Let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 193. Again, Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was also on Thursday's agenda last week. It's a bill at the request of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And you'll see on the Dash 2 amendments to this bill that at your place today, the new language that was left out of that the Dash 1 amendments is on page 2, lines 18 and 19, the upon being notified, and this was something the insurance companies had agreed to with the department, and it was left out of the dash one amendments. So again, lines 18 and 19, the beginning of the sentence, upon being notified.
Okay. Do we have anybody who wants to address the amendment? We have that. We've had this discussion so long ago. Maybe it might be valuables or anybody? Mark? We don't have insurers here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, Mark Long with State Building Codes. Again, the changes between 193-1 and 193-2 were to add in an agreement that we had made with the insurance companies to make sure that they were notified mm-hmm. about the boiler and pressure vessel inspection. They had that notification, and then we would ask that they perform those inspections if they cover that work. We didn't get that in the consensus product that we brought to you with 193-1, and we needed to do that, and that's what 193-2 does.
Okay. Is there anybody else who would like to speak to that amendment?
Excuse me?
I was just asking if there's anybody else that wanted to speak to the amendment. So we're confident that because we do have a couple insurers in the area here, that we have solved that. Anybody has any other questions about it?
My understanding, Mr. Chair, is we've been working with Jack Monroe, as right. you know, and my understanding is he's comfortable with what
okay.
That's
what I wanted to hear.
Yeah. Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Starr.
Move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 193.
Senator Starr has moved the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 193. Any other discussion? Any objection? It's ordered.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 193 as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 193 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any other discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Deckard is excused. I'll carry that one and then I'll start passing them out again. Okay, let's open up a work session on House Bill 2405.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2405 is the bill that would expand the authority to do the electronic permitting with the building codes statewide. Came on a House vote of 58-0. This bill does have a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee that has been discussed to remove that subsequent referral. That the only change in the bill that was discussed at the last meeting was to add a sunset clause on the fee, and that is in the dash one amendments, new section 6 to the bill that would take effect January 2nd, 2018. I think this was at Senator Starr's request. So what the amendment does is actually delete the fee, which is sub D on page 3, and that would take effect again January 2nd, 2018. And this is the fee to pay for the fee on permits that would pay for the program.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2405.
Senator Starr has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 2405. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
This coincides with what the department and basically the payors of this new program have agreed would be the implementation timeline, so I think it's appropriate to have the sunset in the bill, in the statute.
Okay. Any other questions? Any objections? Sir.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2405 as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2405 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any other discussion? Any objection? So order. Mark Senator Decker excused. And Senator Starr, I'll ask you if you could carry that.
Certainly.
Let's open up a work session on House Bill 2076. Janet. Moving too fast for Janet, which is unusual.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2076 was at the request of the Landscape Contractors Board and the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. It would authorize the board to issue probationary landscape licensing license contract for contractors and expand the options for meeting the minimum education requirement for being licensed. This was held over from the previous meeting because Mike Snyder could not be here from the board, and Bill Cross got here right after we adjourned at that meeting. So, and he represents the landscape contractors.
Right. Yes, so we thought we didn't want to be moving a bill when nobody was here. So, Mr. Cross, you want to come forward? And the department, if you want to come forward, anybody? Make sure we're all on the same page here.
Senator Metzger and committee members, my name is Bill Cross. I am here today representing the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association. This is a landscape contractors board bill, but they did share with the industry what their intentions were and were fine with the language of the bill.
Okay. And?
Senator Metzger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Snyder. I'm the administrator for the Landscape Contractors Board. I'm here to answer any questions you have on the bill.
Okay. Any questions before we move forward? Okay. Then, excuse me? Okay. So, we have no amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2076 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2076 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Mark, Senator Deckard is excused. And Senator Monis Anderson, I'm going to ask you to carry that bill, please.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, I've been reminded that we, on 2045, we also had to make a motion to rescind the referral to Ways and Means. So if there's no objection, I'd like to reopen the work session on House Bill 2405. And, yes, to reconsider the vote by which we passed out 2405. Is there any objection to that? All right, so we have no objections. We now have the bill back before us, and I would ask that we remake the motion to the floor, asking that the Ways and Means referral be rescinded.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2405 as amended be reported to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation, with the recommendation that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Excellent. As amended, he said as amended. I can't even repeat, he did it so well. So, any objections to that? All right. If not, so ordered. All right, are we okay now? All right, we'll close work session on 2405. I was getting into a rhythm. All right, now let's open the work session on Senate Bill 94. Janet.
Chair, Senate Bill 94 was heard at the end of January. It's a housekeeping bill that revises certain terms, mainly replacing the term claim with the term complaint in statutes that govern dispute resolution. The bill was not controversial. There was no negative testimony, and the board is here. The administrator of the board is here. Craig Smith, if you have any questions.
Okay. If anybody has any questions, colleagues, I just held that bill that day way back in January because it related to construction contractors, and I thought we might want to have a few of those. But we've got so many now that it's really not pertinent, so I don't mind signing it on. But I know it's been a while. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to bring the department back up. If not, then I think we have no amendments. Yes.
I move Senate Bill 94 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 94 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Please mark Senator Deckard as excused. And let's go back to Senator George to take that one. Okay, thank you. Open up public hearing on Senate Bill 687. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 687 would exempt from the Oregon Insurance Code businesses that arrange for or transport and prepare human remains for return from the place of death to the place where they are to be buried or cremated. As part of prearranged funeral plans, some funeral services offer preparation and return of a person's body, and the funeral home then contracts with other funeral homes that are close to the place of death. Without the exemption in 687, such provisions of funeral plans would technically be considered insurance, and the sale would come under the regulatory requirements of the Oregon Insurance Code.
Okay, thank you. Carl Lundberg and David Schroeder, please. And I believe, Mr. Schroeder, this was you're kind of the driving force behind this.
Yes.
Good. Now I'll ask you to start, and then we'll hear from Mr. Lundberg.
All right. My name is David Schroeder, and I'm with Emergency Management Services. And our company is a transport facilitator, meaning that we sell through third-party marketing companies memberships to consumers who, in the event that the death occurs more than 75 miles from their home, we become a facilitator to transport their mortal remains back to their home. And we simply act as a, our company simply acts as a representative for the member at that point in time, and facilitates and coordinates all of the transport arrangements to return the mortal remains back to home. And we coordinate the efforts between a service provider at the place of death, whom our company would contract with to actually do those arrangements. We don't do those arrangements. We contract with outside third-party service organizations, and then facilitate all of that and maintain the communication between that sending service provider and the receiving funeral home. And I think it was December of 2005, we sat down with the insurance division, and they had looked at what our company wanted to offer in the state of Oregon and said that it, due to the broad range of the definition of insurance in the state of Oregon, that they would consider what we did as insurance, and we would need a certificate of authority to operate and offer what we wanted to operate in the state of Oregon. And they said that if we wanted to pursue that, we might want to consider a legislative revision, which we're doing, to exempt that type of activity from the insurance codes, such as automobile clubs and ambulance organizations. So we simply included language that would exempt that in the bill, and we're obviously here in favor of that.
Thank you. Mr. Lundberg.
Mr. Chair, my name is Carl Lundberg. I'm the Deputy Administrator for the Insurance Division, Department of Consumer and Business Services. We've studied this bill, and we have no objection to it and stand neutral on it.
Okay. Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Moss Anderson.
Does your transport include donors, if the body is to be donated and taken someplace else? Would that prove a conflict with this? I'm not quite understanding insurance code.
Okay, sorry. Our company does not get involved in the disposition, final disposition arrangements or the funeral arrangements. We simply facilitate the transport of the mortal remains back to wherever the family wants the body brought to. And from that point, we don't have any further involvement.
Can you explain to me then insurance code? Maybe I just need a little bit of history on what this is, since it's new to me this time.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, the insurance code regulates the transfer of risks. And you have ambulance services as an example, where people want to prepay for the ambulance service. And so that this is another example where people want to pay for a service, which they want to make a contract for it, and if the event takes place, then they will pick up the costs. So it's a transfer of the cost of the travel from wherever the person dies to their home. And that is what's considered to be a transfer of risk, and consequently it's governed by the insurance code. And what this does, this bill, it takes that transaction and exempts it from the insurance code so that they can carry on their business without having to form an insurance company and comply with all the statutory requirements of capitalization for an insurance company.
So you're more of a broker, is that what? What?
We are a facilitator.
A facilitator. Okay. Thank you.
I think, and Ms. Schroeder, correct me if I'm wrong, if I entered into this agreement with you to provide this service and I'm vacationing in Minnesota And I
Why would you do that?
Yeah, well, it's, I like big mosquitoes in the summer. And, you know, if I were to pass away then the agreement that I had with you would ensure that, you know, my body was brought back to, you know, Portland or wherever, so that I could travel and not have the family worry about. That's why I made the arrangement for them to bring the body back. And what this does is just make sure that it's not an insurance contract. Is that a correct interpretation?
That is. Either a member of your family or the funeral home that you may have called first that may have sold our program to you may have been called, and they might call us at that point, then we would begin to facilitate the return of the mortal remains through a service provider that we would select in Minnesota to bring the body back to Oregon.
Okay. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm having a... I understand that the bill sounds fine to me, but could you explain a little more about your business? Who exactly do you market to, and how do you market to them? Like, for instance, when I travel abroad, I usually get a health insurance policy which would provide for transportation of my body if I was to be killed overseas. And so that's a health insurance policy is what it is. And so I'm trying to figure out who you would market to. I get that through my insurance carrier.
So what's
the difference, and who do you market to?
And the company that you buy the program that you're talking about many times arranges or contracts with companies such as ours to actually facilitate that if it does happen, because they don't do that.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
And our program can be sold through a company such as the one that you buy that from. It can be sold through a funeral home, through a cemetery, through a financial institution. Organizations offer it to their employees, et cetera.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stark.
I mean, this is, from my understanding, this can be where a lot of folks will take care of their final arrangements while they're still alive in a pre-need kind of a basis, and the funeral home could add this on as an additional service. And, you know, it's an opportunity for folks to not have to burden their family with these kinds of issues once they're gone.
That is one of the ways that it is marketed as an added value benefit, but a complete separate contractual arrangement.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. We'll close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 687.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 687 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 687 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objection? No order. Please mark Senator Becker excused, and Senator Starr will carry the bill. Let's open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 734. Janet.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Bill 734 is at the request of the Oregon Bankers Association, and it would allow banks to issue stock to directors, officers, or employees for consideration. It would require that a plan to so issue stock for services performed would require at least two-thirds of the holders of outstanding shares of the institution to vote on the plan and, again, pass it by two-thirds vote. It also requires specific notice of the stock issuance plan, including the information that issuing shares will dilute the interests of existing shareholders. It requires approval of the stock issuance plan also by the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. We have a trio from the Oregon Bankers Association signed up. You want to come forward? Welcome. I'll let you figure out who goes first.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Tim Martinez, the MC today here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association. With me to my right is Steve Way, President and CEO of Silver Falls Bank out in Silverton, Oregon. To his right is Andy Morrow, a attorney in private practice in Portland. What I thought I would do is let Mr. Way go ahead and describe the need for the bill since it directly affects his institution. Steve will then kind of give you a very brief brief legal need for the bill, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Clay.
Thank you. Senator Mesker and committee members, my name is Steve Way. My address is 607 Shadow Ridge Court, Silverton, Oregon, and I am here to testify today in support of Senate Bill 734. I'm also here today representing Silver Falls Bank, which, as Tim said, I'm president and CEO. Silver Falls Bank was founded on May 1st of 2000, and we are a small state-chartered community bank headquartered in Silverton. We are all of $107 million in total assets. We're owned by just over 300 shareholders residing predominantly in Silverton and Salem. We have offices in Oregon City, at Salem, in addition to our Silverton office. We open our doors every day prepared to compete with a plethora of competitors for our deposits and our loans. Competition in banking these days is intense as we compete with not only Oregon banks, but large out-of-state chain banks and non-bank competitors. Competition for our products is healthy for the consumer and the industry. However, we not only compete for product sales, but for employees. Because of the health of the banking industry, at times competition to attract and retain employees is more intense than the competition for our products. Currently, an inequity exists between and competing with bank holding companies and non-bank competitors. Many Oregon banks do not have holding companies, such as Silver Falls Bank, and are prohibited from issuing stock grants to employees. Bank holding companies can now issue stock grants, facilitating employee retention and recruitment. When Silver Falls Bank opened for business on May 1st, 2000, we opened with 7 employees. Of the 7, 6 bought stock in the bank at the initial opening. Of those 6, 5 are currently with us and 1 retired. So it's been my experience is having stock in the hands of employees greatly facilitates loyalty of the company and aligns the interests of the employees with the interests of the stockholders. Allowing Oregon State Chartered Banks the ability to issue stock grants will give us another tool to effectively attract and retain quality employees in our industry. I urge your support of Senate Bill 734, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today and would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. Well, before we do that, let's get the legal analysis of why we need this, because and why I'm very interested in why this is different for Mr. Way's bank than others in this area.
Senator Mesker, members of the committee, my name is Andrew Morrow. I'm an attorney, as Mr. Martinez said, in private practice in Portland and represent banks, a variety of banks around the state. The reason for this, the need for this bill and the dichotomy between bank holding companies and banks is the different statutes have different requirements in terms of the consideration that must be paid for stock. The Bank Act provides that Oregon banks can only sell stock for cash or real property, and that is both at initial organization and continues on through their lifespan. A bank holding company is a regular business corporation. Business corporations can issue stock for not only cash and real property, but tangible or intangible personal property, and for services. And the objective of the compensation that Mr. Way is talking about is to provide compensation for services. Typically, that has in the past been done through stock options. There is a separate provision in the Bank Act that authorizes stock options, also with a two-thirds vote with respect to options issued to employees and directors and officers. However, the accounting treatment of options has changed in the last couple of years, and they're no longer as advantageous in terms of the compensation structure. And a number of companies are going now to restricted stock grants, which means that you actually grant the stock
for employees as incentive compensation, they're subject to restrictions, a vesting period. The employee must stay with the bank a period of time before they would be eligible for that. So the banks want to have the ability to give those kinds of restricted stock grants, as do the business corporations. But the Bank Act, because it requires the stock to be issued for cash or real property, doesn't permit that. What this does is allow banks to issue those grants for services. So that's the reason for the need for the bill. I'd be happy to answer other questions.
Okay, well, yeah. Just help me with those so I can understand that. During the organizational phase of the bank, can you set aside as part of the offering shares for stock options at the initial offering? And is this then all stuff that would take place after the bank has been formed and the stock issued? Is that the difference?
Well, Senator Metzger, the options could be arranged for at the outset of the organization of the bank, because the statute separately provides for those, and the value of those options is really generated going forward because the value of the stock increases.
Hopefully, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't. Then when the stock is actually acquired, you exercise the stock option. Although the price is set earlier, you are paying cash for the shares at that point. With the restricted stock, essentially you're giving those shares for the contract to continue providing services to the bank. And that's not presently permitted.
But it's permitted if the bank is held by a holding company.
Yes, because it is a business corporation that is actually issuing the stock. That is the parent holding company and not the bank itself.
Okay. And, Mr. Chairman, I defer to Andy, but I also think it's not only organization we're concerned about, but down the road when they go to recruit future employees of the bank, that this be available to them as well, not just at organization. You also have in front of you some proposed amendments from the Oregon Bankers Association. I do apologize for those. We think they are needed to clarify what was drafted by legislative council, make perfectly clear that what we're asking for. You should also know that we have talked to the appropriate folks at DCBS, of one of whom I believe is in the room, and they, as I understand it, are accepting both the bill and the amendments.
Okay. Let's first of all, questions. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What you said at the end of your testimony was very interesting to me, because I followed the stock option situation very closely. Clearly, we've rewritten our options accounting procedures because of watering and a whole series of how we expensed out the options and how they didn't show up on the books. Mm-hmm. So in the closing part testimony, you talked about that options aren't as advantageous as is this new mechanism you're pointing to. And so if you would, explain to me how these particular stock grants are then accounted for on your balance sheet.
Okay. Senator Metzger, Senator George, the relatively what has happened with the change in accounting treatment is basically to take away an advantage that the options previously had, which was that essentially they were not expensed as compensation at the time they were granted. So there was no expense at that point. Restricted stock grant generates some expense to the bank by issuing it. The change in the accounting rules was essentially to shift that expense back so that it actually does appear at the time that the option is granted. The accounting for options now requires a formula computation of the expected value of those options, and that takes into account some assumptions about the increase in stock price and how quickly that occurs. And so that's, is that?
Well, I could follow up. it seems like to me that what you're doing is that you have to vest. So when upon this type of a stock grant that you're discussing here in this type of financial transaction, when would you record the expense against the balance sheet, or when would you record the liability against the balance sheet when you make that grant? Because if they've got a vest, it obviously wouldn't happen immediately. So when would you actually show that on your balance sheet?
Senator George, I will explain this as I understand it.
Okay.
And I will review that and correct myself if I'm wrong. But my understanding is that you would show the expense at the time that the stock is issued, because it is issued subject to a subsequent forfeiture. So you have value that's actually issued available to the employee. The employee would typically receive dividends, for example, and have the right to vote those shares, subject to the restriction of if they didn't comply with the vesting requirements, the shares would be forfeited.
Okay, so one last follow-up, if I could. So as we understand, just so I make sure, these grants of stock then would be expensed in the very first year that you granted them as, in essence, normal compensation. If at some point in the future the person did not vest because they quit or left the company, then what would happen is that would come back on as some kind of income, and that's how we understand right now this would be handled. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, great. That's fine. Thank you.
I have another question. Is there any time limitation on the time that you do an offering for the bank, and the bank then goes into business before an option plan like this can be initiated?
Well, Senator Metzger, the option plan has to be approved by the shareholders. So typically these are written into the organizing documents but are approved at the first annual meeting of the shareholders of the bank. And I would presume that would operate in the same way with respect to these restricted stock plans.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Let me just follow up. I'm just trying to understand this a little bit, you know, and you guys are experts on this, but I'm just thinking of if the 10 of us organize a bank and we go in and we create the bank and we have some minority shareholders, and so we all have our prospectus and we, start the bank. I guess what I was just wondering if I, as a minority shareholder, might be surprised, or could I be surprised a month after the bank was approved and went into business, whether the majority shareholders could all of a sudden grant themselves a lot of options in which they have the voting power already, or I just was kind of wondering what type of protection there is for that, for those who go in based on certain assumptions, or you had mentioned the first annual meeting, but I just wondered if this is something that can be turned around, and maybe we'll get some comments on DCBS on that, but that was not perhaps in the original prospectus, and then 30 days later, all of a sudden, we have a special meeting of the board to approve these things.
Senator Mester, it has to be, having founded Silver Falls Bank, we had an option plan at the time, and it had to be disclosed, full disclosure with the dilutive effects and all that in the initial prospectus.
Okay, well, that gets to my question. Okay.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a surprise.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Senator Monis Anderson.
And this is going to be pretty basic, I guess. Silver Falls Bank, it doesn't have a holding company. I need to understand what a holding company is, why you don't have to have one, and other banks do.
Silver Falls Bank was organized as just a unit bank in state of Oregon. We it's our option whether we want to have a holding company or not.
But you'll have to explain what a holding company,
okay.
What does that mean?
Okay.
That term.
Okay. A holding company would actually, if we were to decide that we want to have a holding company, we would form the holding company, and the holding company would acquire all the shares of the bank, and then all the shareholders that used to own shares in the bank now own shares in the holding company. So, and the holding company would have a board of directors, the bank would have a board of directors. So if we wanted to expand this notion, we could have additional banks under a holding company.
Thank you. You explained it.
Okay.
often you find they'll own multiple banks under one umbrella. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Metzger. One quick follow-up to what Senator Metzger asked, and just so I make sure I understand it. In a small bank, like what we're talking about with our regional banks that we have in the state of Oregon, there's a smaller group of shareholders. You have president, CEO, directors, those kind of things. There's no way, what's the protection to the other shareholders? And I think that's what Senator Metzger said, and I didn't get a clear answer. What's the protection to other shareholders if you have a few officers who hold two-thirds of the shares of a particular bank? What's to prohibit them from issuing additional stock to themselves as compensation, in essence watering down the other members of the minority shareholders' ownership in the company or in the bank? What would prohibit that?
As I understand it, any such plan would have to be approved by the shareholders. So,
Senator Metzger, Senator George, I guess the other answer to that in terms of the bank situation and the way we've described this bill is it does have to be approved by DCBS. But if the shareholders have sufficient voting power, they could conceivably develop a plan if they could generate a plan that was satisfactory to the director. One of the other aspects in dealing with banks is that the capital structure is under regulation. Mr. Way's bank obviously is FDIC insured. They're reviewing the capital structure, as is the state. And one of the things they're obviously concerned about is there adequate capital there to really meet the requirements, those regulatory requirements and the safety and soundness requirements of the bank.
And Mr. Chair, Senator George, if I could just add, I mean, again, remember, you're not granting these banks any different powers or authorities than any other business in Oregon would have today.
Any other questions for this group? Okay. You can step down. Is it Tatman? Did I say that correct? Why don't you come and give us your perspective, and you heard some of the questions. Mr. Tatman's with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. We're going to have to, and I'd also like to have your comment on the proposed amendment. What we're trying to do, colleagues, is have this meeting today so that if we decide to move the bill, we'll have the bill, we can just move it rather than delay the hearing. So, and if any enlightenment or maybe any of the questions that we ask from your perspective would be helpful as well.
Okay, thank you. Chair Metzger and members of the committee, my name is David Tatman, and I'm the administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, and that agency oversees banks, credit unions, and any number of financial service organizations in the state of Oregon. We do not have a formal position on this. We have worked with the Oregon Bankers Association, and we believe they've addressed some of the questions we've raised in the past. And so, as Mr. Martinez said, we are generally all right with the concepts in here. And frankly, we looked at the amendments, and the amendments just provide clarification. We think those amendments are well served the bill. So we certainly would encourage those too. Now, getting to the issue, some of the issues that came up. First of all, the law in subsection 2 of the bill provides, as Mr. Morrow said, for the director to step in and approve or presumably disapprove the plan if the director of the department felt that the plan was unfair, unjust, or inequitable to the shareholders. One of the things we take very seriously, because we also regulate the securities industry within our division, we want to make sure that shareholders, both minority and majority shareholders, are treated fairly. So we would be looking at the very issue that Senator George raised of dilution and whether a shareholder would be losing the value of their initial purchase. We don't normally step into small, closely held corporations and try and work out a shareholder dispute, but we want to make sure that a regulated entity like a bank is doing something that is fair to all the shareholders. So we would be reviewing that and presumably weighing in with the bank if we felt something was unjust or unfair to the individual shareholders. So with respect to dilution, that's something we would be closely looking at before approving a plan such as this. And Mr. Morrow is also correct, and frankly, one of our biggest concerns is the capitalizations of banks. You've probably heard at some point or another the concept of the regulation of banks involves CAMEL ratings, and those are the six parts that make up the various pieces we look at when we regulate a bank. The first one is the C, and that stands for capitalization, and to us that's the most important issue. Does the bank have sufficient capital to ride through any type of short-term situation, whether it's having to write off certain losses or whether there's a downturn in the economy or the interest rates? Capitalization is critical. Therefore, we would expect that the bank is well capitalized and not using these potential future services in payment for current purchase of stock as a large vehicle for issuing stock. We would see this as something that's essentially just done as compensation for the officers listed in Section 1. If you note, it's director, officer, or employee, and so they are not doing this for anyone outside the bank itself. So I don't think that this would be used as a vehicle to result in undercapitalization, if you will. We think capitalization would be one of the first things we would look at. And frankly, we look at that every time a bank is chartered. We spend a lot of time in the preparation of allowing a bank to go forward and make sure they're properly capitalized to address any issue that could come up for the first 3, 4, 5 years. So again, I think the capitalization issue is well protected by the process we currently use, and this won't change that.
So from a regulatory standpoint, and in ascertaining safety and soundness, you don't see this as changing anything from your perspective in regulating the bank?
Chair Metzger, that's correct. We would see this as essentially having small impact on that at all. And given the provision, as I mentioned earlier, that we have to approve the process, we think we've got that regulatory concern if there was one covered.
Okay. Now, this is... this applies to state chartered banks, correct?
Correct.
So, can you tell me, is there similar provisions for federally chartered banks than what this would ask for here or for state?
Chair Messier, I can't answer that, but I can get you the answer presumably within 24 hours. I will say that most of the federally chartered banks are of the larger variety, as the CEO from Silver Falls Bank mentioned. Most of them are, quote, chain banks, and they are going to use a holding bank provision, the holding company provision. So you aren't going to see very many individual banks as a national charter. So I'm not sure that that even exists, but we'll find out and confirm that.
We'd be just curious to see that. Any other questions for Mr. Patman? Yes, Senator Mona Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I don't understand is why then Silver Falls couldn't offer stock outside. Right now, this is just pertaining to employees of that bank. But what would preclude them from then offering outside? I might be...
I understand your question. Chair Metzger and Senator Monis Anderson, there is nothing that precludes them from offering stock outside. If they want to go raise additional capital, have a second sale of stock, they can do that. What this is predominantly going to be for, I believe, is for compensation for members of their executive group, the directors, the officers, and presumably as they grow, they want to encourage and bring in more talented, if you will, more experienced, mm-hmm. whatever you want to characterize the
gotcha.
Person as.
Gotcha.
Okay. Any other questions? You have a question?
Yeah.
Janet has a question.
Mr.
You're
Chair,
in trouble now.
Thank you. No, I'm just confused by the vocabulary, and I talked a little bit to Tim about this, but an Oregon Stock Savings Bank, that's just what we would think of as a bank, but it's called an Oregon Stock Savings Bank.
And Mr. Chair, Ms. Atkins, that's correct. That's the terminology in the
bank.
Statutes. Correct.
Probably differentiate from where we used to have mutual savings banks.
Exactly.
It hasn't changed the language.
Exactly.
We won't talk about those. Sorry. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Then what we're going to do is there anybody else who wants to testify on this bill, by the way? What we're going to do is we'll await the amendment. I think we've had the hearing on that. We'd like to have the question about whether there are any standalone federal banks, and maybe there aren't any more, but whether that same provision, I think that would be interesting to note. And then what we'll do is we'll bring the bill back and we have the amendment and work it hopefully as soon as next week. Okay? So we'll close public hearing on Senate Bill 734. Senator Deckert, you were gone for most of the
Chair,
procedure today.
These people want to sit as far away from us as humanly possible. With themselves, like, as far as they can get from us.
Senator Decker, do you wish to vote on any of the bills that you have not voted on?
I'm okay.
You may wish if you'd like to. We're here. I mean, I'm asking.
Okay. I'll vote on them.
Okay. You haven't voted any, have you not?
I have not voted on any.
Is there any objection to allowing Senator Decker to vote on any of the bills before us today? If not, Senator Decker, do you have a list of the bills? It's Senate Bill 192, Senate Bill 193, House Bill 2405, House Bill 2076, Senate Bill 94, and Senate Bill 687. And they were all voted affirmatively.
Yes, rescinded.
Yes, but the vote would be the same. And how would you vote on those bills, Senator?
I'll vote aye. 687.
That's the most important bill.
Senator Starr's bill.
Okay, I'll vote aye on them all.
please mark Senator Deckard as aye on all the bills. We're adjourned. Struggle to help people.